Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Fundraising Success webinar, Exploring the Endless Possibilities of Merge Purge, sponsored by Infogroup Nonprofit. I'm Margaret Battistelli, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and the host of today's event. Conventional wisdom says that the purpose of a merge purge is to limit an acquisition campaign to sending a single mail piece to people who are not current donors. This session will explore how the impact of merge processing goes well beyond the acquisition program and how information gained from it can be turned into actionable data to make more intelligent decisions around who to mail and what to mail to them. But before we get started and I introduce our speakers, there are a few technology pointers that I wanted to go over to help you make the best of today's webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help button at the bottom of the console or let us know via the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portions of today's presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you're enjoying the webinar, and we sure hope you are, and would like to spread the word to your peers, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the Survey button. And you can also tweet right from the console. As you know, today's speakers will be answering select questions live at the end of the presentation. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration in advance at any time. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. After that, the webinar can be viewed from the FS website at fundraisingsuccessmag.com. And once again, we encourage you to tweet about the webinar today and let your friends know what's going on here. With us today to discuss the important topic of merge purge are Amy Houck, List Media Manager at DMW Worldwide, Gretchen Littlefield, President of Infogroup Nonprofit, and Martina White, Senior Consultant at AB Data. And without any further ado, I think I'm going to turn it over to Amy to get started.
I'm sorry, I was muted. Let's start over. Thanks for joining us today.
That's what we were afraid of.
I'd like to kick it off with a couple of basics or things that will probably be basic to most of you. A merge purge itself has a couple of very tactical purposes. As Margaret said, we want to make sure that no duplicate names receive the mailing. We want to make sure that your current members or donors, your board members, other constituents don't receive a cold acquisition piece. We want to make sure that no one who doesn't want to get mail from you gets it and that you're not sending mail anywhere that you don't want it to be going. But there's a few bonuses that you can gather from a merge purge if you know how to use it and if you know how to read the reports. We can get knowledge and insight, confirmation on some data points, prediction. We can also use it to define a mailing strategy and help to guide our creative and messaging. So bonus number one. The first one is just to learn a little bit about your current donors. You're putting them into a merge purge because you need to suppress them, but if you're smart, you'll put them in as very small groups to look at them individually. In other words, look at your newer donors that you've acquired in the past few months in comparison to your less recent or lapsed donors. You could even go so far as to put in your multi-year and more long-term donors separately from your one-time givers just to see if there are any lists that seem to produce those types of donors. And you'll know that based on their high levels of commonality with one another. This can also help you determine what types of lists to pursue for testing, which is a question that everyone always has. So our second bonus, confirmation. The list that you're running always consists of active donors or subscribers or catalog buyers, and as such, they are generally alive. They're generally at a current address, and so while it's not, it doesn't come close to getting NCOA for us. It's not NCOA, but it can help you confirm if the address is that you have on your file is current. You can also confirm that they are indeed alive. And it helps you to know that they're actually giving to other organizations and they have just stopped giving to you. that may suggest a different way to approach them for recapture. Next, we can actually do a little bit of prediction in a crystal ball. In general, lists that net high overall, and specifically those that have a high percentage of single buyers, tend not to respond as well.
Amy, I'm sorry. This is Margaret. I tried to jump in a second ago, but I actually was muted myself. But one of our attendees would like you to explain what the DMA Pander file is. I wanted to get that out of the way before you go too much further.
Sure. And we'll all try to work on our muting. the Pander file is a file that the DMA manages that allows people who do not wish to receive mail to log their name, similar to the Do Not Call list. And so some people call it the DMA Pander file or the Do Not Mail file or the Mail Preference file is what it used to be called. Does that take care of our question?
I think so. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. So that's prediction. We can sort of see based on the output of the merge purge which of our lists are going to do better than others. So moving on to the next one, we'll go into a little bit more depth in terms of how we can use the merge purge to help define a mailing strategy. Many organizations are at a loss when it comes to what can become a very large group of deeply lapsed donors. They'd like some guidance as to how to segment them and identify which ones are most likely to reconnect with your organization. So the Merge Purge actually offers us one way to do that. So let's look at a large national Catholic organization with a very large donor base and consequently a very large deep lapsed donor base. We hypothesize that if they matched a current rented donor list, that they would respond at a higher rate than if they didn't match any list going into the merge. So in other words, not matching indicated that they were no longer giving to any organizations, not just your organization. So we tested this hypothesis in the mail by mailing a cell of matches and a cell of non-matches. You can see how each responded. The matches responded at a rate of nearly twice that of non-matches. It did yield a slightly lower average gift, but with that very high response rate translated into a gift per 1,000 mailed, that was about $250 higher. Okay, on to bonus number 5. Let's look at how a merge purge can help guide how you actually write to your donors. Learning about your donors can cost money, and certainly appending demographic data is very helpful, but it does cost money. There is a hard cost to that data. And a merge purge is something that you're paying for anyway, given that it's a necessary part of your mail program, and it can give you some valuable insight into your current or lapsed donors. So in practice, let's talk about one example. A very large public radio station wanted to make the most of their recapture efforts by speaking to people about the broadcasting content that they cared about the most, or about the giving type that they would be most likely interested in. So we established, in order to do this, we established 3 interest categories, and we looked at which, we put lists into each of those categories as appropriate, and then we looked at the matches. And I will note, just from a creative standpoint, we split the cells between the control and the package that had variable copy that talked to them specifically. So those 3 groups, just to give you a little bit of context and background, one was a news group, and you can see sort of how we spoke to them. It talked about the station offering, intelligence and news and not entertainment and celebrities. A category for local and community for those that wanted to, that are very, into supporting local organizations. And then lastly, the environmental group that we hypothesized would prefer to give on a sustaining basis in order to reduce the number of mailings that they got and just to kind of reduce paper in general. So while we did hypothesize that interest-driven copy would lift response, the categories themselves were not based on any specific research. It was really just intuition. The station understood that regardless of what we learned, we would be provided with a better understanding of that, copy to audience relationship. I will note for you that there were, as with all tests, there were a few caveats. For instance, the variable copy in the environmental package really kind of pushed out the mission-based language that was normally used in the pieces in favor of that environmental copy. So in other words, we kind of sacrificed some of the traditional and very effective language in order to really focus on the environmental and sustainer aspects. In fact, it went so far as to actually bump the ask to the top of the second page. So you can see that there were some creative elements in the test that were not exactly pure, but regardless, here's what we found. The results were still very interesting. And I'll go through these very quickly. I'm cognizant of my time, so we'll look at them very quickly. First, looking at the news category, the variable copy did not outperform the control in terms of response rate or in terms of average gift. And then, of course, as you would suspect, it did not outperform the control when we look at it from a gifts per thousand mailed, which is just a good metric to kind of blend response rate an average gift. In the environmental category, the variable copy also did not outperform the control in terms of response rate. It did, however, produce a substantially higher average gift. It's about $20 higher with the environmental copy. And those two elements just about evened out, caused the gifts per thousand mailed to not be too terribly different between the two packages. What's most interesting to look at is how the local package did. These were local trade and local exchange lists of people that obviously lived in the area. Everyone that they mailed did, but these were people that had shown a demonstrated interest in local organizations. It dramatically outpulled the control in terms of response rate. That's a 0.95 to a 0.63. It did produce a lower average gift, however, but the response rate was so high that when looked at from a gifts per thousand mailed standpoint, it beat it. So the takeaways from this test were that the environmental package probably sacrificed a little bit too much of the mission copy to replace it with that environmental language. It also told us that maybe receiving less mail is not necessarily the only motivator for sustainer giving, or it may not be the most powerful motivator for sustainer giving. We also learned that, based on the results of the local package, that's actually going to be tested against their control overall. It could be that the language and the copy in the local package was just that strong. And then lastly, I did want to mention that we did mail a cell of names that didn't match any list against a cell of names that did match a list, but not one that fell into our three interest categories, environmental, local, and news. They were all mailed to control creative, and those matches responded at 0.72 versus the non-matches at 0.62. So again, the notion that active givers that are people that are on your file, lapsed people on your file that are matching active current files are always going to tend to respond at a higher rate. Okay, and I'll turn it back over to Margaret to introduce our next presenters, Gretchen and Martina.
Great. Thanks so much, Amy. That was a lot of information in a short period of time. I just want to remind our
attendees that if you have any questions for Amy or throughout the rest of the presentation, you don't have to wait to the end. Just go ahead and submit them, and we will get to as many of them as we possibly can at the end. And now we are going to turn things over to Gretchen, President of InfoGroup Nonprofit, and Martina, Senior Consultant at AB Data Consulting.
Hi, this is Martina. I'm just going to move to the next slide. Okay, I'm going to talk about three categories or three areas that you can benefit by tweaking your merges, and that is looking at the list hierarchy, looking at audience segmentation, and then optimizing your campaign through merge. So starting with the list hierarchy, pecking order is important. So how you rank your names can have a big impact on how your names net out, what lists they're assigned to, and the overall success of the merge when you're looking at names that make it to the mailing and those that don't. So my first slide here is talking about superdupes. Superdupes is another way of referring to house-to-rental or house-to-outside list duplication. So many mailers will put house names at the top of their merge so that all of the names in the merge that are duplicates will be assigned to their house lists. And that's good for a number of reasons, pretty standard stuff. So it's to reduce your cost and to be able to talk to people as lapsed donors to the degree that you know that they have an affinity with you. So what I'm recommending here is to actually take that one step further, and that is to take a look at bumping up your names in your merge against all of your lapsed names. So the organization that I'm talking about is a conservation organization. That will be the basis of most of the case studies that I talk about. And that is that what we looked at was we were able to, because of a pricing arrangement with our merge vendor, we were able to bring in a large number of names into our merge, more names than we could ever possibly mail. And what we did was we took those house names that were lapsed but were not necessarily going to make it into the mail plan based on their performance information, and we put all of those house names at the top of the merge, looking at how they bumped up against the outside lists in the merge, and even the warm lists in the merge. And we called those super dupes. And when we did that, we were able to find a large number of names that we knew we had a special affinity with because they'd had a relationship with the organization in the past. So what we're recommending here is taking a look at trying that. You can, when you find those duplicates, you can identify them by the segment in which the house name appears, or you can split them out into a super dupe segment in and of their own so that you track the lapsed singles and lapsed multis separately, and that way you can have a finer tooth comb at how you look at their performance and make determinations based on history. The more you do this, you gather more information on their performance, so you can see how deeply you can mail into your house list this way. So superdupes that you identify in the mail plan are yours because, you know, you've proven that they have an affinity with you and you can mail them as often as you like. The only caveat is that they typically tend to fatigue quickly. The reason being, if they're coming from an older lapsed list that you perhaps would not necessarily find to be a successful list for you, you may find that you are finding the best names the first couple of times that you identify them as being in the merge pool and mailing them, but then after a while that segment will probably fatigue because you've already skimmed off and found the best names. Another caveat to this strategy is that this can actually make your outside list performance look a little wonky as you're looking at list history, because you are removing some multi-names from your outside lists, so it basically is a slightly different list mix than when you would have looked at your outside list performance in the past. So just be aware that you want to track when you started using this methodology so that you can look back at apples and oranges between what looks like a similar list by name and segment. So you may have a health charity list, 6 months, $10 plus, and before you instituted this methodology, it would have one set of results, and after, another set of results. So just be aware of that.
Martina, this is Margaret. I'm going to just interject for a minute. Can you define super dupe again?
Sure. So what I'm talking about is a super dupe. It's a duplicate between a lapsed name and an outside name that's made it into your merge.
A lapsed name to your house file.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So here's the case study that exemplifies this. So we took a look at the merge from April 2010, and we input 1.3 million rental records and 3.8 million house records. And when we ran with using the SuperDupe methodology, we found an additional 100,000 names that we could identify as lapsed owners. In doing so, we could then use that information to save money on list costs and also to raise additional revenue by targeting those donors that we would not have known to be lapsed donors before with a lapsed donor message. So we estimated that those additional 100,000 names could have raised an additional $6,000 in revenue by treating them as lapsed donors with, you know, a 10% improvement in performance by changing that messaging to them. Also, it's an opportunity when you're finding some additional segments to mail that you can then cut from the bottom and order fewer names. So improve the overall performance of your merge by improving the performance of these lapsed donors that have newly been found. Okay, now talking about singles and multis, still under list prioritization. So typically when you're looking at your lapsed names in the merge, you'll split your segments often by this is your, you know, 19 to 24 month single group and a 19 to 24 month multi group. So that's pretty common to think of singles and multis as how often somebody's given to you when they were on your house file. What I'm talking about here under multi-tiering is a slightly different way of looking at multis, and that is identifying multis within your merge and then categorizing them and mailing them as a group within the merge. So basically what we're doing is taking your outside lists and identifying who the multi-buyers are and then categorizing them into groups based on which lists they came from or which category of lists. So you can identify those lists that are coming into your merge that are your best top core list, the middle of the road lists, the marginal lists, and then really bottom of the barrel lists that, you know, you don't based on their cost to acquire or based on the type of list they are coming into your merge. And what we would do in this case is if you had a two-time multi, one name came from a top list and the same name came from a marginal list, that would be a 1-3 multi. You might categorize it that way. And then look and see what its performance is. And organizations have found that when they've done this, they're able to find multi-buyer names within the merge that are better performers and should definitely be mailed, and some that are worse performers and may not even make the mail plan at all. Let me move to the next slide. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. So this is a healthcare mailer. They identified their tiers as tier number one, or were the lists that were most like them, health donor lists. Tier number two, disease affinity. Tier number three, other types of qualified lists. And tier number four were the commercial lists that tended to perform not quite as well. So they were able to identify here the tiered multis from 1-1s, so a name that was on two different health donor lists, 1-2s, so a name that was on a health donor list and a disease affinity, and so forth. You can see the counts here as they were identified, and then those names were mailed. And you may find as you mail using this methodology that these 4-4-tiered multis and 3-4-tiered multis may have unacceptable costs to acquire, and you may find that you don't even want to mail that name, not even once. So it's an opportunity to find names to cut. It works well if you feel that you've got a list universe where you can spare names and you can cut names from your merge.
Martina, I have a question. One of our attendees would like to know, how do you define top-tier lists versus marginal and bottom-of-the-barrel lists?
I think there are two different ways of looking at it. The example on this sheet, on this page here, shows how the lists are tiered based on the overall performance of lists that fall into that category. So you may find that this particular health charity found that their tier one lists were donors for other health charities. And then they tended to perform the best as an overall group. Tier two, and then you tier the lists further down based by overall category. Another way of looking at it would be simply to take your mail plan projections, look at rank or sort your lists in your spreadsheet by cost to acquire, from best cost to acquire to worst, and then tier them that way in quarters or in thirds. So the top 25% of the best performing cost to acquires make tier one. The second group of 25% make tier two and so forth. So there's a couple of different ways you can do this, and you may find that one way works better than the other for your organization.
And what is the minimum size list that you would recommend for using your suggestions?
You know, I think in this case, you want to be able to find enough names where you can track the success of each tier. So if you look at this example, you know, tiers range anywhere from 188,000 names per group to as little as 500 names per group. So obviously the performance in the list with only 500 names is only going to be directional. But it takes the whole list out of the scenario. So if you're looking at multi-buyers by category and you have a lot of smaller lists where you may not ordinarily be able to get list-level information, then those names are filtering up here into larger tiered groups, which might actually provide you more information than if you left the names within the individual lists.
Okay. Okay, thank
you. List size has much to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Moving on to audience segmentation. So one of the things that you can do in your merge is a demographic append. Amy talked about this a little bit as well. There are so many different ways that you can append data within your merge, especially if the merge vendor you work with has a database either, you know, in their facility, or you could send the names out to be appended, which just, you know, adds a couple of days to your merge process. But either way, you can append that information and target messaging around that, target segmentation around that. So, for instance, you bring your names into your merge and then you append age. You can do special offers. An organization I worked with, we found that offering membership discounts to seniors was a great strategy. Because we had the age append in the merge, we could do that, not just to the lapsed names where we might have that information on the database, but also to those names coming in from prospect lists. So it was a great success to be able to find those little nuggets. Another thing that you might find is that, you know, all this talk about generational marketing, you might find that by age appending your merge, you can talk to donors based on their generational cohort. So you can laser your messaging differently for seniors, boomers, and Gen Xers. If you have any Gen Xers in your file, I'm sure we all do have a few of them in there. You can append gender and income, and you know, what I've heard and what I've seen is that gender and income treatments tend to, you know, fall into one of two categories, either looking at ask string variability between men and women, or by income level, and looking at different package treatments. So some organizations have success putting different label packages in front of men and women, or adding special treatments like FOIL to a higher dollar or higher income group that's been identified in the merge to, again, both lapsed and prospect names. So that's another use of demographic appends. And then finally, philanthropic propensity. This comes in handy for mailers who mail a lot of commercial lists because of the sector that they're in, or find that commercial lists work for them but want to maybe expand deeper into commercial lists. What you can do is bump those commercial lists up against a co-op database or some other vendor's data where you identify their philanthropic propensity and find those names in the commercial lists of people who are donating to other groups out there in the marketplace. So you're finding the best performing names, and those names can be scored through a model a philanthropic propensity. So if you're bringing in a commercial list, you may find that you only want to mail the top 80% of those names. At a conservation group that I did work with, we found that when we tried to test an angler package to people who were in the fishing audience, we found that most of the lists that were available to us were commercial lists, either, you know, from sport outfitters or state licensing organizations, things like that. So those lists we hit up against a philanthropic propensity database, and we were able to find improved performance by only mailing, you know, the top 80% of those names.
And Martina, I'm going to interrupt one more time. We have a question that I'm going to read directly from our console. Are these demographics appended on a postal code level?
They're usually appended at a household or an individual level. So that's much, obviously, more specific and pointed. Most service bureaus have this type of data in-house now. The larger ones do. And they typically don't charge for that either. That should be a negotiation point when you're looking to negotiate your cost for the merge. That's something that they should throw in for you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Moving on to tracking lapsed donors as a cohort. This is an idea to consider. Here's a recommendation. Basically, traditionally, when we look at lapsed donors, we look at them as a group that is amorphously changing over time. So you have a 19 to 24-month segment that's a certain set of names, and the next month when you run your merge, that 19 to 24-month segment is made up of a new group of 18-month people that have moved in and an old group of 24-month people who've moved out. So that segment is constantly churning names in and out. Another way that you can look at your lapsed segments is by cohort. So instead, looking at those people who are expired and the months, a group of months in which they gave their last gift. So for instance, you may want to segment your lapsed files by quarter. So January, February, March 2009 expires. March, April, May, June 2009 expires is the example here. And what happens is that group is a finite group of people. It's a finite group of donors who last gave to you in that window. And if you're a seasonal mailer, you find you have more success around the holiday time or year end, you may find that you can mail deeper into some of these segments by identifying, oh, look, you know, I can mail the October, November, December people going all the way back to 2005, but I can't mail that full, you know, 37 to 48 month group. So it's a nice way of identifying these people and thinking of them as a group of people instead of, again, this amorphous group that's constantly changing. It's also interesting because then you can also look back and say, well, what did these people last give to? Perhaps there's some commonality among these people. So when you're mailing your next, you know, annual calendar, you may find that you can find these calendar responsive people within these segments that much easier because you've lumped them together by the last time they gave was during your calendar month campaign. So it's just a different way of looking at your lapsed names. And now moving on to campaign optimization, post-merge modeling. This is where I have found a lot of success in implementing post-merge modeling during the merge process, so right after you get your merge results back, as you're going to your split phase and you're getting ready to split your lists into their various packages. This is when you do this kind of processing. So basically what you do is you have a model created to identify, to score your merge names with. You can have the vendor that you're working with build this model on whatever criteria you work with together to figure out what you think the best names are going to be, or the most likely donors that are going to be to respond to you. Once you have that model built, you can use it to score your entire merge. the names, again, if you're bringing in these lapse balance names or warm balance names, meaning names that aren't necessarily identified as segments that are going to be mailed, but that are available for mailing if you come up short, if you need more names, you know, at the end of the day, the typical thing to do would be just to pull in the next logical list. But here what we're recommending doing is something a little different. So what you do is you apply your model to the entire merge, the names in the merge, the names, the balance names at the bottom of the merge, and then you you drop the worst ventiles from the names that are in your mailing, and you replace them with the best ventiles of the balance names at the bottom of the mailing that wouldn't have otherwise been mailed. So let me show you a little bit of what I'm talking about. I would recommend just starting with the top two ventiles, or you know, 10% of your file. So, for instance, you may identify, or in this case study, we identified 80,000 names that were scored with 19s and 20s, meaning the worst two ventiles of all of the lists that were assigned to be mailed in the merge. We found 80,000 names, and they were projected to have a response rate of 1.25%. So they were going to bring in 1,000 donors, 1,000 responders, at a $30 cost to acquire each, so therefore the net investment would have been $30,000. What we did was we dropped these 80,000 names and we replaced them with as many names as we needed to bring in to replace those 1,000 responders that we're losing by dropping the 80,000 names. Because we projected that these best ventiles, the ones and twos of these balance segments, whether they be lapse names or warm names that are available to you, they were projected based on history that we had to come in with a 1.4% response rate. So in order to bring in those 1,000 responders, we only needed to add back in 71,000 names, not the full 80,000. So we wound up mailing 8,500 fewer names, or 8,500 fewer names. Just leave it at that. Then those names that came in, those 1,000 names, only had a $15 cost to acquire, which was much more acceptable to us, and only cost us $15,000 to bring those guys on board for a savings of $15,000 in that one merge alone. Another way of looking at this would be, instead of just bringing in 71,000 names to get those 1,000 responders, you may just want to bring in and replace the full 80,000, so you're bringing in more responders at perhaps a slightly lower response rate, but you're getting more people in the door for the same number of mail pieces in the mail. So depending upon your strategy, you can do that either way. So once you've tested that a bit, then you can just hone it from there. What we found was that among our top lists, a very, very top list that we were talking about earlier, those core lists, in that case, that health charity, other health donor lists, we found that the worst, the 19s and 20s, the worst performing names of those lists were still bringing in acceptable CTAs. So we wound up keeping those and only dropping the 19s and 20s from middle and marginal lists. You may find that the marginal lists, you want to drop more than just the 19s and 20s. You might want to drop the 17s and 18s or even go crazy and start dropping 15s and 16s, depending upon what you're seeing their performance being. If you have a certain cost to acquire, a limit that, that you're trying to hit, you don't want to mail worse than a $20 cost to acquire, and you're finding that some of these segments are coming in with, you know, $25 cost to acquire, you can drop those as well and fill them in with replacement names elsewhere, either from these top segments or from fill-in names that you're able to get from a vendor model. I mentioned warm segments. If you've got those available to you from other avenues within your organization, go ahead and see if you can get those top ventiles to work for you as well. And then one final way to look at this is to if you are applying chronic non-responder analysis to your merges, you may also find that there are some chronic non-responders that still perform well, or that you can identify them using a model. So you might want to hone them as well and bring back in some people who have been identified as chronic non-responders but are still going to bring in acceptable costs to acquire.
So this is Gretchen Littlefield. I'm going to move on to a couple of case studies also in the area of merge optimization. So we work with quite a few nonprofits that are using optimization or merge advantage, which is really just a fancy way of saying modeling inside of a merge. I think one of the best examples of this is we work with a large nonprofit that built and used and rolled out a model in which we scored the entire mailing, the output of the merge, into 20 segments. Each segment represented about 5% of the mailing. The bottom two segments, 19 and 20, were projected to lose almost $200,000, and that was just in one mailing. So the strategy that we implemented is first we tested that. We actually mailed the names, we scored them, and that we found, in fact, our model there was validated by the mailing. Those names did lose money. So on the next mailing, those names were dropped and eliminated. And that was just for one mailing. Of course, the numbers over the course of the year, and this mailer mails almost every month, were exponentially higher. I think the second part of this type of a strategy, an optimization strategy, that's important to emphasize is this isn't just a strategy to eliminate names from a merge. I mean, obviously you want to identify the names, the records, that are least likely to respond, and you don't want to mail those. But the other part of this, and the part that can be even more exciting, is identifying names that are likely to respond to you. I think of Merge Purge now as being sort of exciting in that instead of focusing on trying to eliminate multiple records and trying to eliminate duplicates, we really focus on trying to find who the donors are. So that same model that you use to eliminate records that are not likely to respond can be used to select donors that are likely to respond. So as Martina said, typically when you're operating in this type of an optimization strategy, there's a fill pool strategy. And that means you're applying the model to some sort of a compiled or a co-op file, and you're going to take the better scoring names and mail those names. In this next example, we built a fill pool model. The names that they filled in with the bottom 10%, had a very high average gift, as you can see in comparison to the other co-op names that they're mailing. The other thing that I would point out in this type of a strategy is that when you're building a model, usually average gift and response rate work in opposite directions of each other. And what I mean by that is a model built to drive response typically produces donors with a lower average gift. So when you're working with your modeling team, make sure that they understand what your goals are. If it's really important to you to acquire donors with a very high average gift, you need to tell the team and the company that you're working with that that's what you want to do. There's a couple of ways to combat getting lower average gift donors and still have responses that are good. You can put a floor into the model where you say, I don't want a donor that's beneath $10, for example, and the model can be built to drive that type of response. But it's extremely important that you coordinate and talk with the team that you're working with and tell them what you're trying to accomplish. Okay. And in addition to modeling, there's some other things that are kind of exciting that you can do. One thing is identifying online donors that are driven by direct marketing campaigns. You can do a matchback. I've worked with a couple of organizations where a significant portion of the online donors were actually coming from the acquisition campaign. So if you can get that file of online donors sent back to your service bureau and match them back to the mail file that went out, you can assess them back to the right list, but also it gives a truer 360 view of how the mail campaign is performing. I think that this is really important for a couple of reasons. One, it's really going to help your list broker to understand which lists are working for you and which ones aren't, but it's also going to help you internally in terms of selling acquisition upstream to the management inside of your organization. I think sometimes what happens inside of organizations is direct mail gets a bit of a bad name, and online seems really exciting and new and shiny, and that's where the budget money tends to go. But if you can show that connection and prove it between the online gifts and the acquisition, you're much more likely to keep funding for your program. And it also actually has the added benefit of being true in most cases. The other thing is taking a white mail files, also make sure that those are matching back to the mail campaign, and track non-personalized second replies back to the list. That's also very important.
And I just wanted to add that I've seen in some packages that have second reply forms in there with a lot of premiums in the package that you can get up to 40% of your responses in on second replies, which then you lose all of the list level information on those names if you don't match them back to the list level using this process.
So the devil is in the details, right? So this is not the particularly sizzle part of the presentation, but it's very, very important. None of this, the best analytics in the world, won't help you if you're not tracking information correctly. So make sure that you're working back in a source code. Make sure that you're actually implementing the testing grid that you outline, and make sure you understand what you're doing and what you've outlined to your team when you're putting together the instructions for the merge purge.
Gretchen, I'm sorry. Can I just interrupt for a minute? A few of our attendees are asking you to explain what a white mail file is.
Okay, so this would be anybody that responds to a direct mail campaign without the actual reply card. So let's say you just get a check in the mail, comes in around the same time as your mailing went out, but there is no reply card in there. So you don't know what the source code was that was associated with it. You don't even necessarily know the mailing. You should have a special code for those people that you put into your database.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. So, like I said before, I think that Merge Purge is really exciting, and it's not really about finding duplicates anymore. It's about identifying donors within all of these lists that we're ordering and mailing on a regular basis. You want to be able to identify the people that are going to become donors, but also who are going to stay with you. You can model for lifetime value also. And as Martina talked about mining your existing base of donors, it's really important to make sure that you are focusing on your own donors first. There is a lot you can do with a lapsed file inside of Emerge. Co-op names and compiled have come a long way from where they were 5-10 years ago. Some of this is because the low cost of storing data at this point, and some of it's also just because of new types of data that are now entering into our industry. Mega Merge is another interesting concept. This is the idea of combining multiple rounds of a merge purge together, and almost like in a baby prospect database environment is the way that I like to think of it. It's a more dynamic environment where you can do much more with modeling, but you also get a truer picture of multis and the interactions between those lists. So, our last 10 ideas to take away.
This is Martina. Gretchen and I are going to alternate on these. Number one, prioritize lapsed names in your merge to save costs and test creative treatments for revenue gains. So we talked about that already. Basically, identify as many lapsed names that you can, and then if you treat them differently, you will see that the performance will go up if you find just the right message to bring them back on board.
Test the higher asterisk to male names in acquisition. Okay, this on a personal level pains me a little bit to say, but unfortunately it tends to prove out true. Testing a higher asterisk even by somewhere $5 to $10 has proven out to be very successful for many of our clients, and you can genderize files before you even go through the merge so that you get your counts correct.
Number three. Update your house file with address changes and deceased hits out of the merge. So you put your house file in as a suppression. The same NCOA process is hit up against those names as is against the male names. So you might as well just bring those back onto your house file, and those are qualified NCOA names. So you don't have to pay for a separate NCOA process on your house file if you're doing it in your merge for your outside mailing, your prospect mailings. And deceased hits as well. If you are applying that as a suppression, you can find out among your house names, who is deceased on the file and treat them accordingly.
Number four, change salutation to deceased hits. And what I mean by this is don't automatically eliminate people because they are deceased. Some of these households can be your best prospects, just make sure that you change the salutation to these households.
Number five, mail old address as resident. This is something I think they do a bit in the catalog world that we could try and on the nonprofit side, and that is, so you identify a change of address, and then you take that change of address and you mail the name that came in on your prospect list at their new address, but what about the old address? It's very possible that the people who moved into the old address have similar demographics and or behavior as the people who've moved out, so you can continue to see if those names actually work for you in a merge.
Mail a new mover package. So the best example of this is mailing name labels to people that have recently moved. It's always a winner that I've found.
Mm-hmm. Number seven. Use individual dupe level and mail the appeal ask string to a member household. So typically what I've seen, my experience has been that merges are usually run at the household level. However, you still run the risk of mailing into households where you have members when you've got members in the household with different last names and what have you. So you can take advantage of that by mailing your prospect piece with an ask string that's appropriate for the member in the household, so that if you for some reason have missed suppressing them from your mailing, you can at least get the right ask string in front of them so you're not bringing in a $15 gift from a $50 donor.
Look at highly interactive lists and alternate orders in consecutive campaigns. This is extremely important. If you come out of a merge and you find there's an overlap between two lists that's, 75-50%, go back to your broker. Ask them to negotiate a different mail date for that list. It's easy to do.
Number nine, know your fill-in name pool. I found that you have so much more flexibility when you're doing your post-merge splits, when you have the actual data in hand, I'm coming in high or I'm coming in low and I need more names and I don't know where to get them, or I'm just going to bring in that next lapse list that wouldn't have made the mail plan. If you have other options, you can really optimize your merge around the edges by playing with these post-merge model names that we were talking about earlier, or going to a co-op partner that has names at the ready that they're willing to ship to you, that day. When you tell them, I'm short 40,000 names, they'll happily send you 40,000 names that they've modeled, for performance that's acceptable to you. And then if you've got warm prospects, again, just another opportunity of names that you can bring in to improve overall performance of your mailing.
The last one, number 10, put your organization's most off-limits list into your next merge and see where the overlap is. So, for example, if the online folks at your organization are protecting the online donors, like it's Fort Knox or something, go ahead, put the list inside the merge and see what the overlap is to outside lists. I will guarantee you it's over 50%. I've never seen a case where that has not happened. And this is the fastest way to prove that online donors also give via direct mail.
And just to be clear, we're not recommending that you actually mail these names. We're recommending that you put them in the merge just to create flags so you can see where the overlap is.
Correct.
Yeah, but don't, you know, step on toes by mailing them. You'll have to use that overlap percentage as an argument to get approval to mail them.
That is a very important point to make. All right, questions.
Okay, we have a few questions. Amy, I'd like to start with you. One of our attendees is asking if you have any ideas or recommendations for a not-for-profit hospital that doesn't rent lists but instead uses patient lists. And I suppose that could go for any organization that doesn't rent but instead has its own sort of built-in list of members or patients or what have you.
Okay, thank you. I would say this. We're using today's webinar was about using Emerge Purge to find out current information about lapsed donors, potentially very deep lapsed donors. That is always trumped by the actual data that you know about your actual givers and your actual donors. Their giving history to you, their age, which presumably you know, their hospital utilization history, their known behavior always trumps the inferred data that we're looking to glean by virtue of where and how the names match in Emerge Purge. So you may not even be needing to be doing Emerge Purge for one, but I would say always, you know, the hierarchy of data is what you know and the proven given history to your organization. This webinar is about what do we, in the absence of that, what do we, you know, what tools are we using to find out a little bit about them. Hopefully that gives you a little bit of insight there.
Okay, thank you. Gretchen, someone has asked, can you please explain the new mover package again?
So this type of a strategy is when you would take people that have recently moved and send them mail labels. Those are things that tend to work well. You cannot do this with NCOA data, though. I need to be clear on that. There are other ways to get new mover data other than NCOA.
Okay, and something that I found interesting was that when you talked about using a higher ask string for male recipients, do you think, I mean, historically, obviously, it's true that males have given more than women, but do you think that that's changing, and is that something that nonprofits should be on the lookout for, the changing role of female donors?
Yes, I do think that things are changing. Unfortunately, it's going to be in about 20 years before we start to see it with most direct marketing donors. I mean, the reality is out of the 60-plus, the men are still the ones writing the larger checks. I think there is some psychology in this, too. Women write more checks. They just tend to be smaller.
Okay, and we have another question that brings up interactive merge. Does anyone care to talk about that and explain what that is? And we just have a few minutes, so it would have to be fairly quick.
Is this would this type of approach increase list costs question? And the answer is no. Optimizing a merge should decrease your list costs because your broker, and you need to work with your broker, have your broker negotiate ahead of time with list owners and say names that are scored as people that are not likely to respond. You're not going to pay for those. Make sure it's negotiated ahead of time. You also need to be very transparent when you're doing this type of work in a merge with the list owners and tell them what you're doing. And then your compiled names that you're modeling should be less expensive.
Okay. And then very quickly, if anyone has something they'd like to add before we wrap up, then this would be the time to do it. Any last thoughts, any quick takeaways? Okay.
I would just encourage everyone. It used to be that merge purge providers were a very tactical and traditional data processing facility, and most of them are catching on to the fact that that process can lend itself to much more higher level thinking in terms of the overall program. So I would just encourage you all to really push your data processing and merge purge providers to, you know, push the envelope a little bit in terms of them expanding their capabilities and understanding what you're trying to use the merge for.
I would agree with that. And I would say also make sure that you're working in a relationship with both your broker and your merge purge house to make sure that it's a consultative relationship between all three parties. And that's important when you start getting into modeling situations with names.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. It looks like we're just about out of time. But before we go, I want to remind everyone that just for attending today's webinar, you're eligible to receive a 25% discount on our new report, The Art and Science of Multi-Channel Fundraising. It's a 130-page roadmap to that perfectly integrated multi-channel mix. Information on how to take advantage of the special offer should be on your screen right now. On behalf of Fundraising Success and InfoGroup Nonprofit, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you could, just take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. We'd be really grateful, and your feedback will help influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. Thanks again for joining us. Thank you to our speakers and our sponsor, and I hope to see you at the next Fundraising Success webinar.